PRS this morning. Do we have any apologies?
Councillor Johnston.
Could I add Councillor Parry as well, please? And the order of business?
As set out on the agenda.
Thank you. Any declarations of interest? Councillor Hardy.
Not a declaration of interest, but I need to leave in about half an hour, if that's all right.
No, it's not all right. Thank you for that. Members are reminded that they can make declarations of interest throughout the meeting. And if we can move on to item 4, minutes of previous meetings. Has anyone got anything to bring up about that?
Just to record that in the discussion of new buyers, I indicated I'd like to see the financial background to the radically improved situation there. I had a long meeting with Alistair Short, and I'm satisfied that we are achieving value for money and greater flexibility as a result.
Thank you, Councillor Smale. Can we amend the minutes, please? Also, I have an amendment. I had asked Kevin Anderson for some follow-up information, which he had subsequently provided as well. So are we happy with the minutes as amended? It's okay. If we can move on to the first item, 5.1, inspection of Bilston Primary School and nursery classes. Grace.
Thank you. The purpose of this report is to update PRS on the outcome of the Bilston inspection, which took place in January and was reported in Education Scotland's letter dated the 24th of April. Section 2.2 of the report outlines the evaluations for Bilston, which were good for 1.1 and 1.3 in the nursery and satisfactory for 1.1 and 3.2 in the primary school. Section 2.3 outlines the key strengths of the school's work, which includes the headteacher's clear direction and leadership, particularly in developing effective partnership working, the strong relationships which staff have with children, parents and the wider community, and the nursery environment which promotes children's curiosity, independence and problem-solving skills. Section 2.4 outlines the three areas for improvement, and Section 2.5 outlines the background factors, including noting that Bilston only opened in August 2016 and therefore it had only been open for 16 months at the point of the inspection. And Section 4 concludes with the recommendations, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Grace. Any questions? Comments? No. Councillor Baird.
Thank you, Chair. It was just to ask, obviously we have two satisfactory ratings there. I was just to ask what the specifics are and what are we doing specifically to tackle those?
So there's also a summary of inspection findings, which gives a lot of detailed information about what the school is going to do moving forward. The two satisfactory evaluations on the whole linked to self-evaluation and raising attainment was because of how new the school actually was. So they need longer-term data in order to move that indicator into a good. So they felt the school was absolutely moving in the right direction, and we've been working specifically with the school on raising attainment in particular, and working with staff to ensure their confidence in building their approaches to moderation and assessment through the broad general education, which is really important. And the head teacher is highly committed to self-evaluation for self-improvement, so that's a continuous process. So they're not waiting, for example, until the end of a term or the end of a year to note their progress. They're doing that on a continuous basis, reporting that to their senior management team at weekly meetings, and I think that that will help drive forward improvement quite quickly within the school. So we would hope that that would move into the good indicators really quite quickly, at least within a year.
We all happy with that? So we could move on to item 5.2, inspection of Dalkeith High School. Grace.
So the purpose of this report is to update PRS on the outcome of the Dalkeith High School inspection, which was reported in Education Scotland's letter. Section 2.2 outlines the evaluations for Dalkeith, which were good for 1.1, 2.3 and 3.2, and satisfactory for 3.1. Section 2.3 outlines the key strengths of the school's work, which are the head teacher is committed and has a clear vision for improvement at Dalkeith High School, that the staff work well together and are engaging in a range of professional learning and leadership activities, and that the school school is developing a creative and enriched curriculum to provide learning pathways for young people. Section 2.4 outlines the important areas for improvement here. Firstly, to continue to enable staff to engage in their professional learning, which also includes opportunities for them to engage in further moderation activities. And we see that in a lot of secondary school reports, evaluate the success of curricular developments on an ongoing basis, because they recently evaluated and changed their curriculum, and align the school's work in refreshing the promoting positive behaviour policy and improve the consistency of how the systems and procedures within the school are used to ensure the wellbeing, inclusion and equality for all young people. And section 4 concludes with the recommendations themselves.
Thank you, Grace. Any questions? Yes, Councillor Russell.
It's not a question. Excuse this squeaky voice. It's not a question. It's comments on regarding the Dalkeith High, how many difficult circumstances the school, the challenges that it takes with given the deprived area status many of the pupils come from. But I'm deeply pleased with this report and glad that there is support to the school to allow it to move forward and move onward and upwards. Thank you.
Councillor Cassidy.
Thank you, Chair. I'd just like to echo Margot's words. This is a very uplifting report to see the turnaround that's taking place, and the fact that the inspectors see no need to revisit these issues, I think, is a very commendable development. So thank you.
Councillor Smale.
Without trying to suggest league tables, I would find this helpful if we had the trend in examination results incorporated in these reports. Is that possible?
In terms of us reporting ourselves, that would come under indicator 3.2. So within the summary of inspection findings, that's the document which now gives the detailed information, which wouldn't include so much as trend data, but it would make qualitative statements. For example, children within Dalkeith perform much better than their comparator schools or are performing in line with comparator schools. That's the kind of information that we would get. When we do the May and December attainment reports, though, that's certainly something that we could build in at that point, if that would be helpful to see that indicator, because raising attainment, the attainment league table, part of it is one aspect, but we also have the wider achievement aspect of it, so we could certainly build both in for those reports.
Any other questions or comments? Okay, thank you, Grace. Moving on to item 5.3, inspection of Midlothian Council High Bank Intermediate Care Service. Who's speaking to
this? I'll be myself.
Morag, thank you.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much. So this report, again, just covers an unannounced visit from the care inspectorate to our High Bank facility, which happened in March 2018. We were assessed over two different areas, one quality of care and support and one around environment. As you'll see from the report, we received a 4 for quality of care, which is good, and a 3 for the environment, which is classed as adequate. The care inspectorate then issued 2 requirements. These featured all around the environmental changes and improvements that had to happen. Considerably, or most of it, was around the bathing facilities, which are not fit for purpose, and internal and external repairs to the premises. They then followed with 4 recommendations around how we can improve our dementia-friendly elements of decoration around the home, more regular case review, improved care planning, and that was specifically around recording, and more regular checking of some of the controlled drugs. Following the visit, there was an action plan drawn together. The majority of these things have been completed. There are still some outstanding work around the bathrooms renovation and upgrade, but that is actually underway as we speak. Just for noting, we have been advised by the care inspector that we will never receive any more than a 3 for environment for High Bank because, again, it's not fit for purpose. It was designed as a residential care home and it's now an intermediate care facility. So we have been working with colleagues to do a business case around a High Bank reprovision, and that will come to Council in June. Again, happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Morag. Questions? Councillor Wallace.
Thanks, Convener. I'm always a wee bit concerned with these inspections when they seem to downgrade the from very good to good just on a single visit. And I think it's just the perceptions of that person that turned up that day. And I think it must be quite a slap in the face to the hard-working staff who, once they see this, And it flies in the face of what the residents and what their families seem to be saying, that they're very, very happy with the care and support they were given. And could I ask as well, when because of the environment is always going to remain adequate only, and we're looking to move premises to Dundas, I believe, yeah, when that's likely to be coming to stream?
Thank you. That's kind words, I think, because you're exactly right that the staff were extremely upset. There was a different inspector this time, and some of it we think is just different perceptions around standards of care. So thank you for picking up on that. In terms of the reprovision, it will come to Council for a decision in June, but we hope within the next 2 years.
Any other questions? Comments? So, item 5.4, Adult Social Care Performance Report. Alison, thank you.
Morag and I will actually be doing this as double act, but I've agreed to kick off to begin with. So this is our performance report for 17-18, the full year, and amongst some of this, there's been some huge changes and developments throughout that period, not least in terms of integration. There's been a lot of work in terms of some of our staffing restructuring in terms of ensuring that we really do have fully integrated teams and services that are delivering. We've also been developing both a workforce framework, a financial strategy and a property strategy to ensure that we're really best able to meet the needs within our strategic plan and the directions that have been issued. It's been well established, and I think we've had a couple of new developments throughout that period as well, particularly involving the voluntary sector, and that has included establishing the wellbeing service and the mental health access point that we'll go on to in a little bit more detail as we pick up some of the areas. So there's been lots of opportunities within the integration agenda for us to take forward delivery of services. In terms of learning disabilities, there's been a couple of key areas that we've been working on. One particularly has been around the day service policy and strategy for us to redesign services and to ensure that we're better meeting the needs of individuals, particularly of young people, and able to do that in a Midlothian context. We have historically been needing to utilise, particularly for young people, some day service provision that's been in Edinburgh, and we're now in that position through part of that redesign and consultation with users and carers to look at localising that and bringing that back into Midlothian. TV at Court, which a couple of individuals have been to visit and some know it reasonably well, is a 12-person specialist residential accommodation in Pennycook, and that is now complete and fully occupied. And reviewing our packages of care, particularly for some of our high-cost packages of care, has remained a real priority as we look to redesign and reshape the way that we deliver services for people with complex support needs. Within physical disabilities and sensory loss, we've been continuing to work really closely with a range of people who have disabilities across Midlothian for us to really work out how we can best support their needs. And that's included an awful lot of work around targeting emerging issues in terms of action plans and ensuring that we've got good information for people so that they can be as self-managing and supportive as possible in amongst some of that. And that's also including enhancing audiology clinics, working much more closely with an RNIB and Deaf Action in terms of some of the sensory impairment issues that we've got. In terms of criminal justice, we've been doing a lot of work to revise our unpaid work service, and that is now operational in this financial year. There's been a lot of planning, and that also means that the new service creates a training pathway for every individual who's on a community payback order with unpaid work, and this means that we'll have an increasing focus on employability skills as well as reparation and really ensuring that we're ensuring for that reducing reoffending, that what we're not doing is having that cycle of people offending and coming back into the service time and time. What we need to do is develop skills to ensure that that's the one occasion that they're going through our service. We've had a big focus on supporting women, so our spring service has been really going from strength to strength throughout 17-18, so supporting women who are at risk of becoming involved in the criminal justice or who are already involved in criminal justice, and that's involved really closely working across services within mental health and substance misuse. And we've really focused more on some of the group stage in recent months to really good effect to ensure that they're offering that peer element of support as well. We've also created a peer support development worker, and they're now in post, and they're working across the three areas of criminal justice, mental health and substance misuse, which are the three services which will be co-located in the recovery hub once it's up and running. This is the first time within criminal justice that we've had a peer support service, and already I think we're beginning to see some of the benefits for people who've been through that process and system. Within substance misuse, there's been an awful lot of work that we've been doing, particularly around the recovery hub, working with service users and carers and voluntary sector, third sector representatives, to make sure that the recovery hub doesn't just become a nice, shiny office space for the staff that work in those services, but that really does meet the needs across all of those user groups, and that we make it as welcoming an environment as we possibly can. We've continued with some of the challenges around some of the budgets. So the Scottish Government has announced an additional £20 million of services to tackle issues around drug and alcohol. As yet, we've not had the indication of how that money will be dispersed. So we're not sure what the impact of that national money will be on a Midlothian context. So we're still waiting for the final confirmation around that. Within mental health, there were a couple of issues that I'd mentioned in the integration point, both around the mental health access points that we run in both Pennykick and Bonnyrigg, and those have continued to grow, and we're seeing a huge demand on that, and we're looking with new mental health monies that are due to come in this financial year to expand that. We're seeing real demand, particularly in the Bonnyrigg service. We also have a wellbeing service that's been operating in 8 of our GP practices, which is really assisting people to access self-help resources. And it's really for those individuals who that 10-minute appointment with the GP is just not enough to address the real multiple issues that may affect someone in dealing with their health. We are going for a final... We're going out for tender for that work. We've been running it as a pilot project, and we've been able to get the funding to have that as a mainstream project. And we're looking to roll that out to all 12 of the GP practices, so it will be available across all of Midlothian. And we continue with our triage project with the police to ensure that those individuals who the police come into contact at times of distress, that we're able to offer the appropriate support as and when. And over that last year, we had spent a lot of time, particularly with carers, focusing on ensuring that the duties and responsibilities under the legislation were in place, as the implementation date was the 1st of April, and we were well on target for that. I'll hand over to Morag for older people, and then we can open up for questions.
Thank you, Alison. So in terms of older people, the quarter that we are reviewing is probably traditionally the most challenging quarter of the year. That was absolutely the case this year, as we saw with the snow week and various other snowy days. I suppose the thing to say is we saw a fantastic effort from the staff involved in terms of continuing to deliver vital services to our elderly and vulnerable people within Midlothian. But also, I guess, in terms of the community aspect around things. And certainly we saw a huge community support to help us, not only in terms of carers working in the community, but also in terms of support to get staff to and from work and in terms of community hospital as well. It's fair to say that there are still significant challenges for older people's services in relation to increased demand and capacity challenges. And it'll be no surprise to note that we still have challenges within the care at home service in terms of providing packages of care, and laterally in terms of actually having care home bed capacity as well. We have started our winter planning already. We started it in May for this year, really trying to act on a debrief from this quarter, and I've already started planning around how we can do some more work in terms of prevention of admission in the first place, looking at our respiratory models of care, our flow and patient movement within the acute hospitals, and how we also get patients back home to Midlothian quicker and in a more safe way. So I suppose, again, the other thing to say is that within older people's services, we have been a fair few managers post down as well, and we're now in a position to recruit too. So whilst that was an exceptionally challenging period, I think the delivery from the staff has been fantastic, and we have commenced our planning for this year, and we'll have a full team moving forwards. Thank you.
Thank you, Alison. And Morag, questions, comments? Councillor Wallace.
Yeah, given that the Scottish Government are going to give £20 million to the drug and alcohol misuse programme, can we assume then that we would roughly get about £500,000 going by our size? And given that, do you have any plans for the use of that cash?
We've made some broad... I think we've made some broad assumptions, but we're not spending the money until we get it. I think the last bit of information that we got from the Scottish Government was obviously we'd seen a reduction of 23% of the funding to begin with. So the 20 million, about 15 million of the 20 million is almost replacing the money that had been taken out from last year. And we have about 5 million of that we think is new monies across Scotland. The indications are that we'll probably get that 15 million allocated out the way it had historically been allocated out, so that would bring our funding back to where it had been. And the 5 million is likely to be an innovation fund that we're going to have to bid for particular pieces of work. In terms of some of the challenges, we'd obviously been making some cuts in services to achieve that 23% savings. So some of the monies that will come back in will allow us to not have to make such radical cuts from some of our services, but it will also allow us to really focus on some of the aspects of recovery. So some of that will to cover some of the bases that we have had to make cuts in. So we've made cuts in nurses in the community team, and we have seen a reduction in our performance figures in terms of how quickly we're assessing people. So we do need to look at bolstering those services that have already seen some of the cuts, but there should be some additional monies for us to look at some of the recovery aspects of work, and particularly in terms of seek, keep and treat, because that's very much about us hunting out people and ensuring that we maintain them. So rather than a three strikes and you're out, it's really about trying to build and develop relationships, because whilst you're particularly experiencing issues with drug and alcohol, it can be very easy for you to disengage from services at key points in time. So this is really about giving us the capacity to try and keep people in that service even when they're having those dips. So it gives us a real opportunity to look to develop the services. But I think the money will come with key priorities from the government in terms of how we need to spend that. It's not a free handout to some extent. It will come with criteria that we need to meet as part of that budget.
Councillor Cassidy.
Thank you, Chair. I see we're having a bit of problem still with the occupational therapy services. Is there any way of combining the voluntary sector with some of these services? Because I've been working with Dalkeith Arts lately, and they seem to do a great job, and they have people there that are recovering from certain aspects of problems in their lives.
I think in some aspects, yes, for very minor aids and adaptations, but I suppose occupational therapy is a professional qualification, and there's some aspects that you do need to be a trained occupational therapist to undertake. What we're looking at doing is seeking some additional capacity for a period of time for us to hopefully reduce some of the waiting times, but we are doing some work with the voluntary sector to look if there's some aspects of the work that they undertake, particularly in terms of some of the minor aids and adaptations, so from handrails and grab rails at front doors and small aids for bathing. We're doing some work certainly with the Red Cross at this point in time to look at what we can do in terms of offering training and support to them. We've also been working with the fire service, who are in and out of people's houses, to do some of the alarm fittings as well. So we are trying to better work with that. But I think what we've been seeing is we've had a real push to ensure that we keep people at home for as long as possible. And with that comes that challenge around our housing stock, although we've done an awful lot to improve our housing stock, isn't fit for purpose necessarily. The houses that people choose to live in when they are physically able at that point, that someone gets older and deteriorates, the house needs a range of aids and adaptations. So we are facing an unprecedented demand, really, in terms of the occupational therapists and how we're able to make accommodation fit for purpose and that can meet their needs as best as possible. So it is a real demand in that area.
Councillor Winchester.
Thank you. I was just looking at the we're off target to refresh and implement the fall strategy, which is on hold. Do you know how long that will be on hold for?
As part of the management review, we have now got an occupational therapy professional lead for Midlothian. They have taken on responsibility for that. They are now just in post. We're expecting the first draft of that at our joint management team at the end of June. There is a refresh of the national fall strategy, which isn't due out until later in the year, so whatever fall strategy we begin to put in place and implement, we will begin to look at that. But yes, that work is now well underway, so we should be able to see much more positive reporting in the coming year around the fall strategy.
Any other questions or comments? No? Right. Thank you. Moving on to 5.5, customer service and, sorry, customer and housing services, Kevin.
Thank you, Chair. In terms of the quarter four and reflecting on the past year, within the revenue services, the rent strategy was agreed at council following public consultation. This agreed the increase in rent for the next 3 year period to continue our stock investment and the new build projects respectively. Within housing, we'd revised the tenant and customer engagement in the service through tenant participation strategy. And in homelessness, this is a national profile with Scottish Government and the Scottish Housing Regulator, and we've achieved a range of outcomes in the past year which are listed in the report, primarily through the reduction of bed and breakfast and the reuse of other council properties, and that continues to be a focus and a plan for the year ahead. We'd also increased the percentage lets to homelessness through the housing allocation policy, and that's due to come to council again during the course of this year for the biannual review. And also through the youth homelessness team who work together with our children's services and appropriate housing for looked after children who are moving into their own homes. And also to ensure that that tenancy is sustainable through the pre-tenancy for life skills that's developed into an SQA award. We also adopted the SHORE standards, and that acronym is for Sustainable Housing on Release, predominantly for people who are being released from prison or on remand. And this was a local practice which has now been adopted nationally through Shelter and the Scottish Prison Service. We also collaborate in terms of the working with Women's Aid in the supply of specific housing, again in reflection of the prevalence of domestic abuse within Midlothian and our efforts to work strategically in addressing that. In terms of community safety, we saw the reinstatement of the Midlothian-funded police officers with the second team now in operation from April of the current calendar year. And the outcomes that are being achieved are reported to the Police and Fire and Rescue Board to monitor performance, with the most recent event of that yesterday. In terms of challenges for the year ahead, despite all that work that's being done, the waiting lists continue to increase because we're just short of 5,000 applicants at the present time. And the local housing strategy is being developed this year, which again is on a three-yearly basis to reflect the particular needs, some of which have been referenced by my colleagues earlier, for particular housing requirements to ensure that those are being addressed. As I say, homelessness is a national theme. We continue to deal with that locally in terms of the range of issues outlined in my report, and we will achieve further reduction in B&B from the actions that are already determined through the savings proposals submitted to Council. However, we do expect some announcements and actions from Scottish Government, as they have a dedicated homelessness and reduction of sleeping action group to achieve rapid rehousing. There's certainly been headlines in respect of Housing First approach in recent weeks, and that is, as I say, due to be announced again in the following weeks, and we'll determine what our approach is in relation to that and bring that to Council in due course. In terms of City Deal, housing is a work stream in relation to that, and we're working with our colleagues in the surrounding councils in terms of developing a 10-year affordable housing programme, and we're starting to see the consequences of that at Shawfair relative to the new building there and our acquisitions from private developers on site at the present time as well. Within customer services, we've been developing the digital transformation, which is one of the main themes for Council, both in terms of its customer service, but also in terms of delivering savings by more effective and efficient working, as further transformation is required across the whole range of services that we deliver on. We did have a proposal for a joint procurement project with East Lothian, but as referenced in the report, that is no longer proceeding, and we're doing this as a Mid Lothian-only project, with procurement currently out in terms of online payments and services, which again is to derive a benefit across the whole range of council services and not just those within customer and housing services. I'm happy to take any questions, Chair.
Thank you, Kevin. Any questions or comments? Councillor Snell.
Yes, looking at the rent arrears building up in connection with universal credit, I realise this is quite controversial, but I'm surprised it's so low. It's only down at 7% when the reports in the press that there's a major crisis here. If that's the case, you're doing very well, given the risks of giving the cash to the tenants so they then voluntarily pay the rent. I wonder if you could talk a little bit more about your experience.
Yes, certainly. We'd made bad debt provision of another £1.6 million within the housing revenue account in anticipation of the effect of universal credit. And certainly in terms of the experience of other authorities, particularly neighbouring ones, we haven't had such a severe impact as was anticipated there. We've been working with COSLA, with those local authorities which have the full universal credit live service, and certainly looking in terms of the outcomes from that. With neighbouring authorities, we saw that prior to the introduction of the full service, we were on what was called a live service of universal credit. Under the live service, we saw an increase in our rent arrears of 9.7%. Under the current live service, which is all benefit applicants, we've certainly seen our arrears increase by 22% over that period of time. Now, the respective values, as I appreciate, Councillor Snell, you may want the numbers on that. Is it the 31st of March 16? It's 1.160 million. And at the end of December, with the current version of Universal Credit, we're at 1.354 million. So we've certainly seen an impact, but not to the extent there. The main impact has been in terms of our temporary accommodation, where we've seen a 278% increase in our rent arrears. Now, certainly, you'll be aware from April of this year, Universal Credit has been withdrawn and applicants are now eligible for housing benefit again. Now, there's no migration retrospectively. We're needing to wait for change in circumstances for individual tenants to then make that shift across. But certainly, we've had an impact, but not to the extent that we'd anticipated, and certainly not the one that's been experienced by neighbouring authorities, also subject to full Universal Credit.
So the 7.07% figure is true, but it's across the board, and many people are not affected by universal credit. But within a small constituency of those who do receive UC, we are having a distinct problem, which eventually ends either in a write-off and or receiving the housing benefit directly. So our downside is limited by that factor.
Yeah, that's true. Certainly from the variations that were announced in the UK government budget last November, those are filtering through. We're seeing that, and as you say, the consequences of our rent arrears is stable, and that's an achievement in comparison to neighbouring authorities.
Thank you. I have a comment and a question, Kevin. I am both delighted and appalled to see that we've got over 1,600 households that we're helping with DHP. It's great that we're doing it, but it's appalling that we're in this situation, that we're having to do that, and it just goes to show the effect that the benefit changes are having. My question is about housing options. When your staff are talking about housing options, are they mentioning the lift scheme at all? It's something that I've recently come across and really had not thought about it. For people who think of themselves as, well, I'm just going to wait for a council house, but one of my constituents, knowing that her chances of getting a council house are very low, has actually just managed to get herself a beautiful three-bedroom property with a mortgage of £30,000, and it's certainly been the best way forward for her.
Yes, is the short answer. We do look at options beyond social rented, whether that's council or housing association properties, because by its nature, as you say, housing options covers the whole range of income streams. We do certainly have people on the council house waiting list who are in a higher income bracket than the average, and that's predominantly because they can't either accrue a deposit or afford a mortgage, and that's where we've certainly been looking at mid-market rent within the terms of City Deal as being an option to something that we haven't done before. We've left that to the housing associations. So we've certainly been developing those opportunities. Yes, we've been promoting Lift. Indeed, Scottish Government have recently been promoting Lift, and that's come out to us. But it does feature on our housing options website, which is part of the work we've been doing on a Lothian-wide basis as well, but with the specific requirements in Midlothian, and also shared equity, that still is available. So yes, the whole range of housing options is publicised.
Lovely. Thank you, Kevin. Any other questions or comments before we move on? Thank you. 5.6, Children's Services. Joan, thank you.
morning. Thank you, Chair. Okay, as set out in the Children's Services report, I have indicated successful areas of success within the Children's Plan for 2017-18. These include the PACE programme, where we are moving children to permanent placements more quickly than ever before. A full evaluation of this programme will be done in November 2018. But as members know, we are looking to have children with a permanent plan once we accommodate them within 7.5 months, which is a very ambitious plan, but you know, is well on track at this moment in time. So I will report back later in relation to the evaluation of this. Looked after children's successes include the refurbishment of Dalkeith and Wood Pennycook home, the current homes that we already have. We've now made them 2 5-bedroom houses. This is working much better in relation to managing the flow of children that are coming in and out the houses, and also trying to get a better match in relation to who should reside in each house. It means that children have easier access into schools, etc. So we'll continue in that vein going forward. We've also set up a bespoke provision within Woodburn Terrace for 2 young people with severe and complex needs, which means that they've been able to maintain links with their family, which is hugely important, and also with their education as well, which is one of an ethos of Mid Lothian Council in relation to maintaining children within Mid Lothian. So that's been a success. The Champions Board goes from strength to strength. We had another event on Friday afternoon, which was really well attended by many different agencies, but most importantly had a huge turnout in relation to looked after children. And again, it was them telling them our story, what bits we get right, what bits we didn't quite get right yet. But it was done in a very eloquent way, and a great, you know, they're performing really, really well, so much so that tomorrow we'll have an event where one of our care experienced young people that we've actually began to employ a year ago as a participation assistant is up for a national award. So hopefully I'll be able to report back on the success of that as we go forward. So we'll continue in that vein. The report also covers other areas of success as set out in the paper. Emerging challenges and risks are set out in the report, but these should not be underestimated. For example, up until 2 weeks ago, we had 4 young people who were in secure care at a cost of £250,000 minimum per child per year. This is an emerging theme that is ongoing at this moment in time. As members will be aware, children go to secure not on the back of our recommendations normally, but on the back of sheriff recommendations and from children's hearing, so we have little control over who enters secure care. What I would like to offer reassurances with is that we do have a working group up now looking at alternatives to secure. This will probably be a year-long programme as we're going around other local authorities who appear to have lower numbers than ourselves, looking at the type of model that they're adopting, and hopefully we can pick up some things from them in relation to taking this forward. And just finally, just to mention, I've been working with partner agencies in relation to summer activities for children with additional support needs over the summer. I think it's been fair to say this has been a very challenging project going forward. However, we now have a menu of options available for parents and carers that have just gone to print on Friday afternoon there. So hopefully we shall have something that we'll be putting in school bags at the end of this week in relation to parents having choice over what they wish to choose over the summer period. But happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Joan. Councillor Leigh Douglas.
Thank you, Joan. I just wanted to mention that the great increase, the 28% increase in the number of children looked after at home. And I'll see that it's a priority for you going forward. And I was just wondering how that's benchmarked. I didn't quite understand how it was benchmarked.
So this morning with my service managers, we were obviously very aware of this. I think it's a combination of things. I think the PACE programme is highlighting that we're getting to children quicker, in which case they will enter the children's hearing system quicker, because we need, if parents don't agree to children being accommodated, we need the children's hearing in order to do that. Our figures for child protection are very low at the moment as well, and we are questioning, are people using the children's hearing route rather than child protection? I don't think there's an answer that's good or bad, by the way, at this moment in time. However, what we've done to combat that is that we've just appointed last week a looked after and accommodated at home reviewing officer. And she is going to do some analysis of the figures over the summer period to find out what is the age range for this. I suspect it will be younger children, which is a positive, by the way, you know, in getting there early. But also, who is referring children to children's reporters? Because it's not just social work that do that, you know, anybody can do it. So as that we get some analysis as to what are the trends in relation to this grouping of young people, because, yes, you're right, and you've highlighted it, it is very high. It's now going above the national average, which for all our other stats were below the national average. So we're looking at that, and I'll be able to report back on that once this officer gets in post. Okay.
Councillor Beard.
Thank you, Chair. There's a lot of good in the report, and I want to commend you for that, and staff. There was one thing that jumped out, though, and it was about improving for the future and the self-directed support audit. I just wondered if you could expand on where we are with that.
Okay, I mean, my own view is that within children's services, within self-directed support, we are a lot further ahead than our neighbouring authorities, obviously. I meet with my counterparts in other local areas. I think what we're doing, you know, what we've seen is that the spend is increasing, which we expected it to increase. That was the whole philosophy behind it, is that parents, carers get to choose what they want rather than being dictated to by social work. What we've not seen is a decrease and our other services, other resources that we provided as usual anyway. But certainly self-directed support is something that is rolled out throughout children's services. We tend not to use the term self-directed support. You know, we have a new assessment forum, and it's, you know, what could improve, and so it's done much more service user friendly, and they help design that forum. So, you know, going forward, I am comfortable that we are certainly on track. What we need is more policies behind it. However, as with a lot of happening in my service, we have someone on maternity leave. I just met with her last week, so she's coming back, so the policies is the first thing that she needs to implement in relation to going forward. But in relation to our service, self-directed support, I'm very comfortable where we are in relation to taking this forward.
Yes, Peter.
Thank you, Chair. Obviously, a lot of very good work's going on here. Just a little concern. At the bottom of page 79, the sickness absence figures rising up to 10.79. I wonder if there's a story behind that.
Yes. I mean, we're on sickness absence management. You know, we report on it every fortnight, and we report to Mary every month in relation to it. In this industry, we do get stress as our main, you know, area as to why people are off sick. We attempt to offer as much support as possible, but actually, unfortunately, the nature of the work means that, you know, people do go off in stress, and unfortunately, when they do go off, they tend to be off on a longer term basis. It's not a quick fix, you know, that they can return to. As I say, you know, it is robustly managed. And we offer all the support that is available to us and more if needed. But when it's long-term sickness, and it's not the biggest, obviously, area, service area, so, you know, small numbers obviously have a big impact. But I'd just like to offer reassurance that we are on it and we're managing it.
So it wasn't anything as simple as a flu epidemic at some point picked up from the kids?
No, unfortunately, no.
Any more questions or comments? No, we'll move on to item 5.7, Communities and Economy. Ian, thank you.
Thanks, Chair. The progress on meeting strategic outcomes for the Communities and Economy Service is shown on the first page and a half. I won't go through all of those or dwell on them, but if there's questions arising, happy to take those. What I'd rather like to do is to look upon the key issues for this year, 2018-19, and perhaps a bit beyond. And the full list of those is shown on the second page of the report, but I'll pick it up in four themes, if I may. First off, the biggest issue that we're dealing with is addressing the infrastructure pressures of substantial and rapid development, housing development, and therefore population growth over the next 10 years. Now, the newly adopted local development plan and the strategic development plan gives us at least a settled position in terms of the numbers of houses coming forward up until about 2030. And that's an advantage, at least because it allows us to plan, even though the rate is that much greater than any other authority in Scotland. Critical to that will be the developer contributions arrangements, and the strategic, or supplementary guidance rather, for that is in preparation and will shortly be coming out in draft for members to see. It is critical because it's on the decisions we make on those which will allow us to ensure that we maximise the benefit from development industry in assuaging the costs of the additional infrastructure. Part of that is also the critical relationship of the work we do on strategic guidance for developer contributions with the existing strategies for other areas. So the learning estate strategy, that for community facilities, working with the integrated joint board on their health requirements becomes critical. Second topic I want to pick up is driving forward the agenda of working with communities. This is not just taking forward the spirit of the Christie Commission principles, but also the provisions, the wording, of the Community Empowerment Act 2015, much of which has now come into force. So we're now looking at things like community asset transfer to local groups and organisations, further schemes of participatory budgeting to build on the successful ones we did last year by way of pilots, master plan approvals and implementations at Newton Grange Town Centre and Stop Hill, working with the Innit Together group and the local community at Mayfield to look at the Mayfield Centre, reviewing the rights and advice services in Midlothian, which came up before council at the last meeting, to address increased demand resulting from a number of factors, but also the introduction of universal credit. Working with representative groups in the local community in Penicuik on the imminent town centre regeneration scheme, working with One Dalkeith on its development of a business improvement district for the town centre. So there's a whole range of things being worked on. Third big theme to pick out is realigning the Economic Development Service following a period of significant staff changes and doing so through a new economic development strategy. The existing one is now looking pretty tired, it's 4 years old, but we need to focus on inclusive growth in particular, which would align with what's happening with the Single Midlothian Plan and addressing the welfare disparities in relation to income attainment and health. So it's about creating opportunities to provide on-the-ground, small-scale business premises to meet high demand, maintaining a strong performance in business gateway work, ensuring Midlothian confirms its position as a substantial gainer from the finally approved city deal, not only through projects in Midlothian, such as Sheriff Hall Roundabout, but also projects in nearby locations, as well as the work of the Skills Programme. And part of that city deal also relates to infrastructure improvements to ensure that the further expansion of one of our key employment sectors at Easterbush is assured. Just return to a fourth theme and just to remind members that communities and economy includes the four frontline services of planning, building standards, environmental health and trading standards, where speed and quality of the service are essential performance measures. So maintaining performance levels in handling an increase in both major and minor planning applications and the consequent building warrant applications is critical. So it's accounting not just for the big developments that come forward, but for those people who are putting in extensions and basic smaller scale developments. They want to see they're expecting their application to be back within 8 weeks. They're timing simple things. They're timing their contractors coming in. They want the work done in the summer. All those sorts of things becomes critical. If we start to get problems in terms of dealing with, say, the small-scale applications, then the problems really build, and your inboxes tend to get filled as well. In terms of further establishing the trading standards partnership with East Lothian Council, which was set up some time ago, but it really needs to move to another level if we're going to get the benefits of providing the critical mass of staff to operate a competent service across both areas. Maintaining a fully responsive environmental health service, but also accounting for some big issues which arise. And in the last year, we had a food contamination problem at one of our major food manufacturers in Midlothian. That's a firm that employing something over 90 staff, which really was looking into some difficulty at one point, and a lot of work from our environmental health team to sort them out and help them out. And, of course, the gas ingress incidents at Gore Bridge, one of which has pretty much reached the end of its process with terms of final report, which is at Newbyres Crescent, but also at Newbyres Avenue, we still have issues which we're dealing with. So, in summary, Chair, there are a huge number of issues to consider. It's important to direct limited resources to the primary activities of driving inclusive growth, working with communities to deliver demonstrable improvements and providing frontline regulatory and development services that deliver quality services on time. Happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Ian. Queries? Comments? Councillor Smale?
One possibility going forward to allow you more resource for planning officers is to double the charges perhaps on retrospective planning applications. Now, my understanding is that Midlothian hasn't had the ability to do that up to now, but there may be some change coming down the tracks.
Yeah, I mean, we obviously look to see what fees we can increase, and we try and do that on an annual basis. The planning application building warrant fees, of course, are set nationally, as you know, so we've got no control over those, or they have been rising steadily over the past few years, which has been a benefit, and that's shown well in terms of the budgets for the service, which is good. We're, as you know, as arising from the financial strategy decisions, we are looking at seeking developer funding to assist with major housing applications. And we're also now introducing charging for the monitoring of Section 75 applications for developers. So we're expecting to see income coming through there. But, yeah, we will look at every opportunity to try and maximise charges. We've done that pretty much in the last 2 years with building standards. We've seen a substantial benefit from that. But we're always looking for opportunities to do that.
Councillor Cassidy.
Thank you, Chair. I'm reading this wrong, but the trading standards thing seems to have stalled. How is that affecting our overall performance? I see that we're not getting good marks on it at the moment. Is it affecting the frontline service that we should be providing the public with?
In terms of the frontline service, there's a team of three. And they're very experienced and they do very well. So in terms of the day-to-day service, that's good. One of the things you may see in the figures is the benchmarking figures, where it shows our service quite poor in the league table. The reason for that is the benchmarking arrangements, in terms of which are done nationally, into trading standards, they include any money that's supplied to Citizens Advice Bureau. Now, this council is supports the CABs very well and puts a lot of money into them. So because that's included in the figures for the Trading Standards Service, there are some parts of Scotland where councils put virtually nothing into their CABs, and then, of course, they show very well in terms of the benchmarking. It's just a nature. It's something we have raised with the benchmarking organisation on a regular basis, and I think that is due to change, but colleagues can help me on that. But in terms of the arrangements for the joint for the partnership, that still is something which has it was established a couple of years back. It's been slower progress than I would have liked in trying to get that to a position which I think is going to be effective. I think there's still the scope to do that, but we do need to work with East on that one.
We discussed at Police Board yesterday about test purchasing. Councillor Munro, do you want to speak to this? Or will I speak to... No. We discussed test purchasing, and I noted on the papers here that no test purchasing had been able to take place. And we did have quite a discussion about from the problems at Newton Grange, the amount of younger people who were getting their hands on alcohol. Just wondered if you could... was it just tobacco that what we weren't able to test purchase, or are we able to test purchase liquor as well? Thanks.
As I understand, the test purchasing, we've just not done as much test purchasing this year as we would have liked to do so. My understanding is that an expectation is that we will be doing some this current year. There is actually some Scottish Government money, or unring fence, but Scottish Government money to assist local authorities with tobacco test purchasing. And we would aim to take advantage of that during the course of this year to do that. All I'll say is it's because we're sending young people into premises on their own, albeit that the offices are close by, it is something which, as you might imagine, we need to do really carefully. We need to get the right people, the right training, all the safeguards in place. So it is, it's a time-consuming process, but one which is worthwhile. Previous testing regimes have generally shown that retailers are behaving. We've only picked up a minority of cases where we've had to take action. But, yeah, that's something which we need to pick up on further this year.
Any other queries? Councillor Russell.
Thank you, Chair. I noticed one of the challenges that the business improvement district within Dalkeith Town Centre, you have that in one of the challenges, is regaining focus on it. But I see further up that the funding has been approved for it. Why do you think it's a challenge?
It's probably more a question of making sure that it appears in the work programme. It's almost a reminder. I've no indications of difficulties with the One Dalkeith, but I think from previous experience, for example, at Pennycook and again at Easterbush, although that's changed somewhat, is that a fair bit of council officer input is helpful in just maintaining a bit of progress. That's not to say that there's any inadequacy in terms of those who are actually running One Dalkeith and taking it forward, but I think they always welcome a fair bit of officer input, and Caroline White from our team is working closely with them.
Right, if we're all happy with that, then if we move on to item 5.8, education. Grace, thank you.
Thanks. I'm committed to the creation of a world-class education system through excellence and equity. The report for this quarter focuses on the outcomes for the whole of the last year, and the theme for last year was Mind the Gap, taking a closer look at progression, progression, progression. So in terms of raising attainment through the broad general education, in December 2017, the Scottish Government published for the first time the curriculum for excellence levels. That's the levels from primary one all the way through to the end of S3. And the table within the report shows the improvements on the previous year. So we were pleased because there were improvements in 14 out of 16 of the key measures. And we want to make sure that we work hard on that because we were still below the national average. So we implemented three attainment sessions with our primary heads to make sure that all of the children were on track to achieve their expected levels, and we'll be collecting in that final data over the course of the next 2 weeks, and that again will be published in December 2018. In terms of closing the gap, however, relating to SIMD 1 and 2, the following improvements I think are notable when compared with the previous year. There was a 7.1% improvement by the end of P1, a 9.74% improvement by the end of Primary 4, an 8.27% improvement by the end of Primary 7, and a staggering 17.6% improvement by the end of S3. So we're pleased with that, but there's still a great deal of work still to be done there. In 2017, of course, the Scottish Government announced the Pupil Equity Fund, and we're gathering data on that to make sure that we're benchmarking that appropriately so that the interventions that were planned are having the desired impact, and we rigorously monitor that. And of course, Lawfield Primary School presented at the launch of the PEF conference last year, and this year the New Battle Learning Community presented their work to the South East Pupil Equity Fund Conference. And of course, today our pupils were welcomed into the New Battle. And my thanks to everybody involved with that. It was lovely to see their faces and just quite a spectacular building there. In terms of the senior phase, including positive destinations, we of course had the local measure report which we presented to Council in December, and this quarter four report contains the leavers measures that was also reported in full to May Council. Overall, we're particularly pleased with the improvements in literacy and numeracy. There at level four, we see a trend there from 86% back in 2015 to 92% in 2017. That's an important indicator. But even more than that, the 14% improvement there over the three-year pattern, but within level five improvements from 56% to 66% is really important because more children who achieve at level five, that opens up hires within the S5 and S6, so that's an important indicator for us. Positive destinations, of course, we've secured the 95% positive destinations, and we want to improve that even further. And of course, it's the sustained destinations that we really want to focus on moving forward. Improving attainment for all, of course, we're making some improvements there, but we need to do far more work around the breadth and depth measures. And we're really pleased around the attainment versus deprivation that for the first time, SIMD 1 performance is now much greater than the national establishment. So that's really paid off in terms of our focus there. But actually, we now need to look far closer at SIMD 10. So it's an interesting demographic within Midlothian. So we really need to increase that level of challenge now that we know that we're performing well for SIMD 1.
In terms of learning provision, we've done a lot of work around the curriculum, and we mentioned that within the Dalkeith High report. We also have a comprehensive leadership programme, and that's rooted in fundamentally in evidence-based research, and that's making a difference not just to our head teachers, but to our deputy head teachers and principal teachers. So we have networks for each of those groups, and we meet monthly. In addition to that, we will also launch the new Centre for Research and Innovation on the 22nd of June in partnership with the university. And this is an exciting initiative because it will help us to work out what is really having an impact on improving outcomes in the classroom and beginning making our policies rooted in the evidence that we see on the ground. So a real bottom-up approach to policy making there. In terms of ensuring wellbeing, equity and inclusion, we're continuing to focus on attendance and reducing exclusions. The following year-end achievements are notable, but we've still got a way to go there. So there's been a drop of 27 primary exclusions. So from 101 down to only 74 this year. So we're pleased with that progress. But there's only been a drop of 19 secondary exclusions. So from 318 the previous year to 299. I would like to halve that. So we need to do a lot of work there because we're still above the national average. And in terms of attendance, we've not made the same improvement. So we're seeing a slight fall in attendance there as reported in the September census update. So we're going to be working jointly with East Lothian on an attendance campaign called Attendance Matters. It's something that was implemented a few years ago in East Lothian, worked really, really well. So we both want to do that as a joint effort because we really know that if attendance improves, obviously children will be more engaged in their learning. So it's well worth the effort to focus within that. In terms of early years, we've reported a lot to Council in terms of the expansion, so a lot of work going in there. And we will also bring a detailed report back to June Council about the funding because that was recently announced. And we've also improved a lot within lifelong learning and employability, not just in with the positive destinations, but you also see that within developing Mid Lothian's young workforce in its totality. Also the work linked to the European Structural Fund and Employability Support and the Veterans Placement Internship Programme that we put there. And it's also interesting to note that LLE have also attracted over 240,000 through winning contracts and external funding and charging for services. So that's a positive move there. In terms of emerging challenges and risks, I've put at the top there the Scottish Government's Education Governance Review. So we hope to have something published at the end of June, so we'll know more about the direction of travel there following the consultation on the bill. Also, the change to National 5 qualifications, I think it's important to put this in there. This year is the first year that we see the removal of internal assessments, so children will be assessed for National 5 purely on sitting examinations. That's quite challenging for children. And I think there's potentially a risk to the Level 5 qualification. So I spoke about how much we've improved within that area. I think children being tested purely on examination is tending to test them on their memory rather than testing them on their wider ability to understand the subject itself. And as Ian mentioned, I've also put down the rate of demographic growth and, of course, the implementation ongoing of the Learning Estate Strategy. But happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Grace. Questions? Councillor Baird.
Thank you, Chair. There's definitely a lot of good, but a lot of challenges as well, and that's like you said, there's a lot of work being done there. There was one thing that jumped out at me though was and it's about the Good to Be Two scheme. Now, one of the limiting factors has been noted is that it's the DWP not making the information available to people who qualify. The problem is that I know that's been going on for years. What is it about the DWP that they are so against that offering that to people?
So, from what I understand, it's about the sharing of information. And I think some progress is being made on that, so that we hope that at some point in the future, if that information is shared, we can be far more proactive. And I think that would be have a very, very positive impact if that actually could be shared. But at this time, we just don't have that data.
Yeah, because my understanding is that they know within the DWP system, anyone who applies for child tax credit or anybody who has a child, they will know if they qualify or not. So it should just be a simple case of a green light should go up and say, oh, your child qualifies for the Good to Be Two initiative. That's 600 hours of free childcare a week. Oh, no, a week a year. That would be great. Can we have that? No. Yeah, and it's and two of my kids have gone through that as well. It's hugely valuable. But again, the problem is that when you go down to the job centre and you apply for your credit, and they don't tell you that you qualify for it. So it really is. I don't know what means, but if we can get it through to the Department of Work and Pensions, that this is a great programme and would certainly help the people that they're trying to help if they would just tell people that they qualify for it and that they just need to go over the road and hand in a form. Simple as that.
Councillor Alexander.
I was just wondering about the high number of exclusions and what really causes that. And are we different to other areas?
So we're above the national average, and we historically have been above the national average. We've brought that down considerably over the past couple of years, but still not enough. We need to do far more work around restorative practices within our schools. So we've started that, but that's quite a long process in order to embed that across all of our schools. There's some outstanding practice within some of our secondaries at reducing exclusions. Beeslack, for example, have virtually no exclusions. New Battle have significantly reduced those exclusions, as has Dalkeith High School. So we really need to make sure that we're embedding restorative practice across all of our settings. We've also done a lot of work in terms of the inclusion review, ensuring that we have the appropriate support at the right time for our children. That's made quite a significant difference, and we're seeing our secondary schools also implement nurture bases. But again, that's probably going to be about a year to 18 months before we see a really positive impact on that. But I'm convinced we're moving in the right direction, but we just need to make sure, as I said, that I think our target should be to half the number of exclusions next year and really to try to drive that forward. It has a negative impact on children if they're out of school for too long, so we really need to make sure that we minimise any negative impact. School is the greatest protective factor for our children, so the more inclusive we can be, I think the better the overall outcomes will be.
Councillor Allen.
Do we do anything for the children while they are excluded, or are they just left?
We do. We've done a lot of work with the programme that's called Pathways. So that service do provide a whole range of activities, restorative practice workshops for children. We also have PAVE, and we extended PAVE to include PAVE 2. So over the last 2 years, we've had PAVE 2. And that's a really important initiative, because for some children who don't respond well to being in a classroom setting, they perhaps respond well to doing the learning outside of school or in other contexts. And that has actually provided a unique context for those young people. Heather Fleming leads that work, and actually they've done a lot of work in ensuring that those children move on to the first stages in the employability pipeline, so actually doing a bit of college and a bit of apprenticeship work together with a bit of volunteering has actually been the magic within that that's turned those children's lives around. So we're looking to grow that across all of our communities moving forward.
Another positive feature compared to historic position of middle learning is the percentage of people going to positive destinations, and that's very encouraging. And I know we do a lot of good work preparing them with coaching them with their CV and so on. That's been excellent. However, there was one little word in what you were saying that added a worry bead to my very long necklace in these matters, and that was the question of sustainable destinations, bringing with it the fear that perhaps some people do get jobs but aren't able to get into the discipline of work and therefore fall away. Are we any worse than any other part of Scotland for that phenomenon?
I'm pleased to say we're much better. So we've done a lot of work on that. We also track that weekly. So we make sure that as soon as we know that a child has dropped out of a positive destination, our schools and the lifelong learning and employability team get on the phone, or the door knockers go round. So that's been really important, because if they do drop off, we don't want them out for a long period of time. But we're actually well above the national average for our sustained destinations. What we're looking to do moving forward, though, is begin to move away from the school leaver destinations, the 95% target, and hopefully have that 95% target for sustained destinations, although the teams that I manage will not be happy that I've said that and up in the ante, but it's actually a really important indicator for us. And the other thing we're going to be doing next year is really targeting our children that are looked after, so working very closely with Jones Service to make sure that we have all of the support in place there, because those children need particularly bespoke tailor-made packages to help them sustain positive destinations too.
Councillor Leigh Douglas.
Thanks, Grace. I'm really concerned about the removal of the internal assessments going forward. I was just wondering, obviously for obvious reasons, that children aren't able to do internal assessments during the year but have to sit the final exam. I was just wondering how you will approach that in the schools, just as a preparation.
Well, that's a significant shift from Curriculum for Excellence, which is actually all about ensuring that you have continuous assessment. That's important for children to be able to demonstrate their skills and their abilities. The S4, 5 and 6 cohort of teachers have been working very closely with one another to make sure that the courses were overhauled in order to deliver that. I wouldn't underestimate the challenge of that, because that was implemented at the same time as teaching the courses. Mm-hmm. So it's not as if staff had 2 or 3 years in preparation for that. And that's another change on top of the significant changes that have happened within the whole overhaul of the new qualifications. We will, of course, analyse the attainment when it comes through, because it's very different. I'm not sure that we would be able to compare that well with the previous year's attainment, mm-hmm. because it is significantly different. And from that, we'll learn lessons, whether it's had an impact on particular subjects more than others. And it certainly, I think, will have an impact on children who have extra time for exams. So you could imagine them maybe being in an exam room for up to 5 hours. That's quite challenging. So we'll firmly evaluate the outcomes of that, not just in its totality across Midlothian. I think it will be important to do that analysis at school-based level and also across subjects.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you. I have a comment and a question, Grace. I've had some really good feedback about New Battle. My friend was at the Zumba class there. So I know it's not your part, but she said the facilities are absolutely fantastic, and her child is really looking forward to starting S1 after the summer, so I think that's really exciting stuff. What I did want to ask you about is I was very pleased to attend Cornbank Primary last week for the raising of the green flag, which they've been awarded for the sixth time, the first primary school or first school in Midlothian, as I understand. The eco schools, is that something that's very much up to individual schools, or is that something that we're encouraging the schools to go for?
Yeah, we absolutely encourage eco schools, the Sol Tyre Award, the John Muir Award. We firmly believe that wider achievement is actually the vehicle, together with arts and sport, to raise attainment. And I think Cornbank are getting quite competitive, because it was last week that primary that were the winners before that. So it's great to see the sixth green flag. And it's not to underestimate actually the achievements of the children in that school. To achieve a sixth green flag means that every child is involved in some form of leadership activity, as are all of the staff. So really, really important for the whole of Midlothian to see that that's actually possible to do. So the challenge will be a seventh ring.
I think I might have said that to them last week, and it really was great to go around the school. And I was given a tour by the children rather than the staff, and they were so positive, so bubbling with enthusiasm. It really was great to see, and I'll be very happy. I think myself and Councillor Wallace are going back next week or the week after to help them celebrate their 50th birthday. So thank you for that. Any other comments or... No, happy to move on. 5.9, commercial operations. Ricky, please.
Thanks, Chair. As with my colleagues, I'll go through some of the more strategic outcomes for the year and then touch on some of the challenges and then take questions. In terms of some of the strategic outcomes, first one to mention is the work that's been ongoing to complete the residual waste plant down at Miller Hill. members will be aware that we have up and running a food waste plant that takes all of Midlothian's food waste. The residual plant, the reason that I specifically want to mention that is that historically residual waste plants are very, very difficult to deliver on time. And when I speak to colleagues in that industry, this is probably one of the first that's ever likely to be on time. So that'll be able to take our commissioning waste late in this current calendar year, and then full delivery of all our waste by the kind of late spring of 2019. In terms of waste, we're currently developing a waste strategy that's going to take us through the next 5 years, and that will look at all elements of the waste service, including both collections, our household waste recycling centres, and street cleaning. And it's going to take in account legislative changes that are coming about. Members will be aware that we've signed up to the Household Waste Charter. There's a new code of practice in terms of street sweeping that's being brought forward. So the charter is looking to encompass all of these changes. Moving on to land and countryside, one of the kind of main focuses of my services has been on the kind of entrepreneurial side, and that's about achieving specific income targets. And within the land and countryside, where, as I say, we've focused, there is quite a bit of success. Not only is it about being able to secure external grants to allow us to progress works, but it's also about working and competing with the private sector, primarily in private sector housing developments. And what we're trying to do there is not kind of take the one-off instant hits. It's about looking at something that's more sustainable. So, for example, some of the agreements that we've got in place with Heart Builders has taken us right through to the end of 2019. So that gives us an income stream that we can kind of use and plan accordingly. But we're also looking to maximise the opportunities that we've got for Vogrie. So we've mentioned the dance festivals, for example. We've also expanded some of the offerings that are there on a daily basis for users of Vogrie, and early indications are that that's proven successful. But not only that, we've also got the Ranger Service, and I think I need to mention them in that whilst what they're not necessarily doing is generating income, they are generating a significant amount of volunteer time that in essence means that we don't have to do certain things, i.e. at a cost. And I've kind of outlined there that it's some £80-odd thousand pounds worth of work that we're secured in that regard. In terms of taking services forward, we completed an audit through the Freight Transport Authority of our garage facilities, and that's with the intention to make that fit for purpose going forward. Members will be aware that one of the savings options that we've put forward is to deliver taxi testing up at Hopefield when that gets developed. So that's part and parcel of that kind of process. Touching back again on the entrepreneurial side, the health and safety team, which is only a small team, half a dozen or so people, but what we're focused in on is the training opportunities. The team have developed quite a comprehensive brochure of training activity. We've also built in some resilience with the team, and whilst this year we achieved an income of some 50,000, next year we're hoping to kind of raise that, and my expectation is that we'll almost double that training need. We've identified some work through working with the armed forces, there's potential there. We've also looked at training on the vehicle side, so CPC training for drivers, offering that to the private sector. So as I say, it's quite exciting seeing the opportunities that are arising and the advantages we're taking of that training. Moving on, just to mention within the road service, obviously members will be aware of having taken on the powers for decriminalised parking. That's now bedding down, settling down. There is a small working group, or a cross-member working group, that's going to meet in June, and that's going to consider how we take decriminalised parking forward. That can look at existing areas, issues that have perhaps arisen now that we've got more robust enforcement in place. But it's also some of the asks that we've got are things like parking for residents in certain areas, so we'll be able to consider that going forward. Some of the emerging challenges, again, I'll highlight within the waste sector, some of the challenges are there. Not only have we got significant housing growth that has an impact, but there's also continuing uncertainty in the disposal market for dry recyclates. We've also got the government proposing to have the deposit return scheme and what the potential implications for that might be, and also obviously the drive to eradicate certain avoidable plastic waste in the country. Moving on to the land and countryside, there are changes within the land and countryside side in terms of reducing, for example, floral displays. We are working with local communities where we can, but it's about getting other local authorities, local communities, to come on board and work with us. We've got a scheme that's ongoing up in Loanhead. It's working really well. The community have kind of embraced that, and we're working with them, and that's proven successful. And it's a model. If we can roll that out, then that has positive benefits for us. And probably the last thing to mention, it'll be no surprise, just the challenge in relation to the road network. Members will be aware that following the last winter period, we had a significant increase in the number of potholes, damage to the road network. We've been working over the last 5 or 6 weeks to try and address that in the short term, and looking at what we can do more longer term with more permanent repairs, which will be starting very soon on the strategic network. So as you go out and about, you'll see where that's all highlighted. So we're hoping to at least start to address that issue as well. Chair, I'll pause at that point and happy to take any questions.
Thanks, Ricky. Councillor Wallace.
Thanks, Ricky. Going on to that about the road services, how will the collapse of Crummock affect Midlothian? And will Midlothian Council be able to employ some of the people, the staff that have been made redundant?
Yeah, so Crummock were one of three framework contractors that we had. We've had a working relationship with Crummock for probably the best part of 30 years now. So in terms of their expertise and their willingness to kind of work with us, and I say that willingness, one example I would give is in the winter maintenance service. Very much they've always been on the front foot in terms of offering resources to help us in the winter. In terms of opportunities, historically we struggled to recruit experienced road workers. We put an advert out, I suppose fortuitously, about 4 weeks ago, which will be hitting the marketplace now, and that's to take on four employees. But what I've been speaking to colleagues around is whether we can extend that and utilise some of the capital budget to take on a further four members of staff. So we'll be going out, we'll be looking to see if we can recruit those staff and bring them as part of our workforce.
Councillor Wallace.
Gavin, considering 284 men or something were made redundant, I mean, us taking eight on isn't going to make a big dent in that. If Crummock needed 284 men to help us repair our potholes, why can Midlothian Council not soak up some of these employees and use them to help us get the roads back to a better state?
So the first thing is probably to mention, you're probably aware that Crummock were a significant civil contractor as much as a road maintenance contractor, and much of their focus has been on significant projects. So, for example, they worked on the Edinburgh Trams and projects of that nature. So a lot of the staff and their skills, etc., aren't necessarily within the sphere of road maintenance. They had quite a significant professional staff as well. So what we're trying to do is take that balance between our existing commitments to our other framework contractors and within the ability of the capital programme to take on, and that's kind of where we see the balance is about eight. Absolutely, I'd love to take on a greater number, but I don't have that long-term sustainable budget to allow us to do that at this time.
Councillor Alexander.
Thank you. I congratulate the road team on their work in keeping the roads open and gritted during the severe winter, also for their hard work in achieving the award for best roads. However, the condition of the roads since the winter, as you say, has deteriorated. The roads and arteries, we need that, you know, to bring in business and tourists. And what is going to be done to keep the roads in that award-winning condition? Also, that we have been really good in gaining entrepreneurial work, both in the roads department and in health and safety. Should some of that money that we're bringing in be used to make us even more entrepreneurial? And I just wondered also as well, has the money from the Scottish Government for the severe roads, the severe winter conditions, has that come to Midlothian yet?
So the first question you asked is around the ability to maintain the roads, etc. So as a senior leadership group, there was a discussion last week on the capital plan, the capital strategy going forward. So within that, as part of the asset management plan, there is sums that have been put forward to allow us to maintain the roads at a steady state. So that is a council. There's about 31% of our road network that requires to be considered for maintenance. So that comes around across the 32 local authorities. There's a way of measuring the condition of the road, and so that's kind of where we sit. And that's probably reflected across all local authorities. So in terms of what we've asked from the capital plan is to ensure that the road network doesn't deteriorate. The work that we're currently doing and the work that I was speaking about is to repair as much of the damage that's caused from the winter period as we can. In terms of the entrepreneurial part, we look at opportunities right across the board. What I would say, and Councillor Wallace has touched on the sad demise of Crummock, within the road sector, the profit element is quite small. It's quite a competitive market, and that's why we've focused on, for example, some of the hard and the soft landscaping works within the Land and Countryside team. But what we have done there is there are certain skills in the roads team that lend itself to work in those type of projects. So that's kind of primarily where we're focusing on. And in terms of your last point around the $10 million that was allocated by Scottish Government, I would probably defer to my colleague Gary Fairley. I'm not sure if that money has been received as of yet, but as far as I'm aware, it was imminent, but I don't know what proportions coming our way, so I don't know if Gary can add anything to that.
Yeah, Chair. Scottish Government wrote to us on the 30th of April outlining our share, which was £149,000, indicating at that point that payment would be made by Transport Scotland within the next few days. So I anticipate that we've already received that money in the bank account.
Thank you. Councillor Smale.
Yes, in that context, I would have thought we were about 3% of the Scottish. So we seem to be shortchanged by that formula, considering the Beast from the East particularly affected the eastern counties of the Central Belt.
It's not something that I can comment on, to be honest. I suppose the only comment I would make, if I can do that, is reflect back on the last time that we had a particularly bad winter, some 6-7 years ago, and we made an application through the Belwyn scheme, and our expenditure at that time was significantly higher than the expenditure this time, and if my memory serves me right, we got about a similar sum of money. So if I look at it in that context, I could probably argue that we've came out okay, but in terms of the percentage splits, again, I would have to defer to Gary on that one.
Yeah, I really probably can't comment any further on the quantum of the £10 million that the Scottish Government made available. It is what it is. But what I can advise, the distribution was agreed between following discussions between government and COSLA, it was agreed that the $10 million be distributed between 32 authorities based on pre-existing distribution methods, which is partly winter maintenance grant-aided expenditure and the roads maintenance grant-aided expenditure line, so using predetermined distribution formula, and that's how we arrive at our percentage share.
I know we're due to discuss this offline, but there is some indication that the Bellowin scheme, which I think Gary was being referred to, is actually open as well as the $10 million. Would you like to comment on that? And should we apply under the Bellowin scheme?
My understanding is that government would not use Bellowin to pay any further money, as the $10 million is the full and final offer, so to speak. Members should bear in mind Bellowin is a discretionary scheme. It's completely at the discretion of government. Regardless of how much you may spend on an incident like the winter, government need not make any payment whatsoever under Bellowin.
Thank you for clarifying that. So the $10 million is all there is, despite some controversy in the public domain that the Bellowin might be supplementary. My understanding is we're therefore facing $750,000 negative variance against the expected budget for winter road maintenance.
So in terms of winter, we did spend over by approximately $750,000 to deal with the impact of winter, but that wasn't necessarily the residual impact of on the road network, i.e. repairs, if that's what you're asking.
So the $750,000 was the snow impact, and the additional accelerated pothole repairs, that's in addition?
That's correct.
Councillor Cassidy.
Aye, thank you, Chair. Ricky, I'd just like to compliment your department. I know there's been some challenging times of late, and from what I've seen, you guys are rising to the challenge now, and the roads are starting to look a lot better in Midlothian from what I've seen. So I'd just like to congratulate you and thank you.
Thank you, that's appreciated.
Any other comments, questions? Again, Ricky, I'd like to thank your team for a very speedy response. It's making me look great. All these pothole queries that I'm forwarding onto you and getting them done within a couple of days. Fabulous. Thank you very much. If we can move on to item 5.10, Finance and Integrated Support Service. Gary, thank you.
Thanks, Chair. So the report covers the successes for the year, the achievements for the year, and I suppose what we highlight is a wide range of achievements that have a strategic impact on the Council, both in terms of delivery of service, financial sustainability and transformation for the future. The key parts, as ever, are around the financial strategy and the change programme that is a key part of that in terms of being able to live within the budget sums that we have available. In 2017-18, we saw the first comprehensive workforce strategy coming through Council, first as a draft and then finalised in December. And we're working on continuing updating and refining the associated workforce plans for that. And we continue through my service and others to deliver change through the Delivering Excellence model. In terms of achievements, there's a wide range. Members will be fully familiar with where we are in terms of the financial position, the achievements in terms of bringing a budget forward and having a budget approved by Council. We have, you know, indeed, the achievements talk about the 16-17 audited financial statements, but we're in the process of just finalising the 17-18 statements, and they'll come forward to the next Council meeting. And we continue to bring forward the quarterly monitoring reports to give members an overview of the financial position, where the Council is and how it is performing against the approved budget. I touched on the workforce strategy. That's just part of a range of achievements in the year. We've launched a whole series of new people policies during the year, and we're seeing really positive impacts on the back of those. We at last week's leadership forum, we launched with the management team a range of quite progressive policies, and those will start to be published. You'll have seen some of the posters that are starting to emerge as we start to communicate those across the workforce. We've got an effective lifelong learning committee, and we council approved two elected members as champions there, and that's having an impact and raising the profile. We ran late last year the VSER scheme, and we'll bring forward figures for that in the monitoring report in terms of the impact it's had on the budget. I think we're looking at an average payback of just around about a year in terms of the cost versus return on that. In fact, it's tomorrow. We've been shortlisted as an organisation for the National Living Wage Awards, and we'll know tomorrow night whether we've been successful on that. So fingers crossed. I'll make sure we publicise that if we are indeed. But even getting to the stage of shortlisted in the category, six organisations alongside us, that in itself is an achievement. You know, one of the other shortlisted organisations in our category is the CIPD, the professional body. So we're up against, you know, some big hitters. But that's a real achievement, even getting to that stage. In terms of digital, Grace was an earlier talked about New Battle, but the digital team have done a huge amount of work to support and actually implement the digital technology within the new Digital Centre of Excellence. That's been a huge effort, but it's all going very smoothly. In fact, the team are up there today and the rest of the week with their digital services blue T-shirts on, helping teachers and pupils get used to the technology and iron out any teething problems. The team's been heavily involved, along with legal colleagues, with the preparation for the GDPR regulations, which, you know, the go-live date of 25th of May, but we've really still got a huge amount of work to do to make sure we get to the stage where we can talk about GDPR being business as usual and just part of our day-to-day routine. I suppose we've seen that not as a negative, but as a positive. It's about helping make sure that data we hold for our customers, we treat it with respect, and we our expectations in terms of how we manage and handle customer data being very high. And we've continued alongside New Battle not to lose sight of the investment in the remainder of the school estate and in the digital estate. We put new Wi-Fi into Roslyn Primary School just a few weeks ago, and that's been a success. Council Junior, you've approved a new contract delivery plan for procurement, and we're working away on what we need to do to comply with the Procurement Reform Act, and we'll see a report coming to August Council in terms of our revised strategy and the required annual report. In terms of other things, just touch on, your members will be aware that the Shaping Our Future campaign that the communications team ran for us across the autumn around the budget savings. We had a huge level of engagement in that process, and I suppose it did two things. One, it raised the profile of the financial challenge for the council within the community, and also helped us engage with the community in terms of views, and helped the community have an influence on the final set of proposals that members approved. If I turn then maybe to the challenges, no surprises around each of the areas. The financial strategy, we'll bring a report forward to June Council, updating the financial strategy, beginning the process of helping members set the budget for 1920. We saw Friday, I think it was, or Thursday afternoon, Scottish Government published its first medium-term financial strategy, so a bit of digestion to do on that. But certainly the early commentators, in terms of the impact on local government, I think I read this morning, potentially looking at a real terms reduction of 2% per annum, as local government being one of the non-protected lines within that medium-term financial strategy. So the challenge of reducing local funding from Scottish Government is still there. Touched on earlier, we'll bring the accounts forward in terms of closing off last year to Council in June, and that's all part of a process of continuing to keep strong financial stewardship and being able to make sure the Council's in a financially sustainable position going forward. The other thing members will see coming forward shortly is our first capital strategy, which looks like 10 years. We'll bring that forward to Council first in draft because it comes with challenges about affordability and about priorities, and we then look to finalise that over the summer and bring forward a final strategy in the autumn. There's a challenge because of affordability, but the other thing, not to lose sight of it, it represents a series of huge investments for Midlothian in terms of essential infrastructure. We need to keep a focus on the workforce strategy and actually the actions behind that so that we're never standing still, moving things forward all the time. The same in terms of digital and digital learning strategy, particularly around cybersecurity and access to the public services network. That's a continual process of making sure that the systems, the technology and the business processes are all up to date and protecting the council as much as possible. And indeed, GDPR that I touched on, it didn't finish on the 25th of May. Indeed, there's hard work to be done until we really get that embedded across all services. I suppose the other things in terms of challenges on the horizon, that focus on the best value audit that we will see emerging across, you know, making sure in terms of the financial position, the workforce position, engagement with our employees, our asset management plans, that all of those areas we're match fit, so to speak, for the audit. And from my own perspective, the challenge of continuing to take costs out of the business. We have a savings target for the service of £1.14 million from about a £12 million budget this year. So that's continuing to take costs out where we can, and also to continue to change, modernise, transform the way that we work. So happy to pause there, Chair, and happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Gary. Questions? Councillor Alexander.
I would just like to congratulate the Council on being so progressive in making sure that we are up there with the living wage.
Stolen my thunder, thank you. Any other questions? No? Again, we sometimes be a bit doom and gloom with you, Gary, because it always seems to be a lot of bad news, but the fact that we've been shortlisted for the National Living Wage Award and also awarded a Gold Award for the Healthy Working Lives is some fantastic news.
Well, it's always good to come and not be a case where you're shooting the messenger.
Right, thank you very much for that. Moving on to item 5.11, property and facilities management. Gary, please.
Thank you. Just touching on the highlights of the outcomes for the past year. Quite a number of successful handovers this year, obviously including Paradise and Lone Head, TV at Court for social work, and the continuation of the house build programme, where we've actually handed over 78 complete units this year. But not least is the new Newbattle Centre. That opened on the 26th of May and the school goes in there today. Unfortunately, it was late. People haven't really noticed the impact of that. I have. Stressed me out to the top end of my life, to be honest. But we did manage to go over the line. What I will say is the effort that was put in by my team especially to get us over that line was incredible. The building's a big, big building. If you've not been up there, go up there. And I've said to others, if you do nothing else, stand in the tone zone area and look out that window. The view sells tickets all day long. It's great. But the effort put in by the team to get over the finish line on the 26th of May meant that we had very little snagging. So it was a long, hard slog to get the building as oven ready as it possibly could be. Yes, we're going to get snagging. We always get snagging in buildings, but in the scale of the building that we've got is a small, small list. So that was a lot of effort, which was actually worth it at the end of the day. Continuing on, we've worked hard at getting our fair share of energy grants and projects funded on the back of that. In facility services, the online catering payment system was an investment that was put in throughout the year. And we've now completed all the primary schools, and that's resulted in a 70% uptake from the parents there. So they're now paying online as opposed to bringing cash into the school, and it's getting handled and lost and all the rest of it. So big success there. It's also showing up areas where people are not paying, which is a revelation. So we're now chasing them down and being able to square that circle with the education colleagues as well. We continue within the catering department to look at new outlets for our cafes. We've had the Mining Museum, Lowenhead Centre, Roslyn Primary School, but we've now got the new Battle. In the first weekend, we actually had 1,500 people through the door there. Now, that was a soft launch. It wasn't us getting marching bands into the place. It was just trying to open the doors and let people come to us. And 1,500 people came through the door. Between catering and the leisure department, we took about £3,000 worth of sales as well. So that was a good start. The additional successes there is the pilot nursery lunches that we're looking at, working with early years teams in education from our kitchens. That's going to be a challenge into the future. At the moment, we obviously provide free school meals for primary 1 to 3. We don't really know, but we expect to see that's going to continue in a younger age group with the early years coming through the doors. So our nursery schools will probably have to get that same service as well. So that's going to have an impact that we're going to have to rise to the challenge for. Our school meals have, in the annual census, and it's a one-off day, we've seen those figures rise in both our high school and our primary schools. But that's had the impact of the primary 1 to 3 free school meals in there as well. Not necessarily a highlight, but it's just daily business. But we have renegotiated our contracts with Skanska, Melville Housing Association and the NHS for our cleaning and porterage services there. So it means that we're doing something right if they want to continue working with us. At Saltersgate, a highlight there to note is that we had difficulties with security, and there was needs for protection for pupils and the staff, and the facilities have been worked on, and that's now been adapted to make sure that doesn't give concerns going forward. Whilst we were doing that, we were looking at the underuse of some of the facilities there, so we've transformed staff rooms, which really weren't getting used properly, into curricular space now. In sport and leisure, we've also changed our systems there, and there's a new leisure management system being put in. That's gone live through April. It will ultimately offer online services for bookings and payments to be made, so step into this current century. Sport and leisure, as I say, the Tone Zone and the lights have been operational in advance of the school opening at Newbattle, and everybody that's been in there, almost a person, have said how they feel that the facility up there, why has it happened to them in Mayfield and Easthouses? They really can't believe it, but they've got something which is as good as anywhere else in Scotland. It's fantastic. The probably unsung heroes in sport and leisure, the Midlothian Active Choices and the Ageing Well teams have done exceptionally well this year. And the Ageing Well team, part of that's the walking football. They've now received a national award, the Jess Barrow Award, for campaigning and influencing at Age Scotland's annual conference in Glasgow in March. So well done to them. In property assets, as I said earlier, we continue to get our fair share of energy funding, but most importantly, we use that to reduce our energy costs and our carbon footprint. So we've been working hard at getting that into the sites around the estate. We have made application through the Non-Domestic Energy Efficiency Fund, or framework, sorry, and that's something that we'll be coming back to Council very shortly, where there's a larger investment if we were to take it up, secured with a contractor who would then guarantee paybacks. It's a long-term project, but it's one that we'll bring back to June Council and take decisions from there. Purchases of properties, the likes of 49 Abbey Road went on through the year, and that's allowed us to release the in-demand industrial estate for our supporting our local businesses. So we've freed up the space which we used to use for the election equipment and the likes, and we've taken that into that redundant building down at Abbey Road and let the industrial estate flourish as a result. In building services, the challenges ahead there are the delivery of that major works programme that's been hinted at in the capital programme. There's a lot ahead of us. If we were to address the school estate alone, it's a big project, but we've got everybody else competing for various bits and pieces as well. So we have to make sure that the team's able to maintain that momentum that we've gained. But we've also got the challenge of the industry-wide position, where there's a lack of good, skilled operatives. And it's not going to change. We are looking at trying to address that through bringing people in-house, investing in apprentices and the likes, but in actual fact, the wage bills that people are starting to demand again in trades, for example, are about £10 an hour more than what we can afford to pay. So it's quite a significant gap, and we're having to try and address that as best as we can. We also have difficulty at the moment trying to obtain new building sites for our house building programme. No surprise insofar as Midlothian is one of the fastest growing areas in Scotland. Other developers are clamouring for the same pieces of land that we'd be looking at. In facility services, we've got the reconfiguration of the services within janitorial and cleaning against the backdrop of an increasing demand from the early years provision within the schools. So there's a bit of a balancing act to be done there. In catering, we're aiming to reduce our plastics packaging. We've got one or two trials underway, and one particular school, Tynewater, actually wrote a rather eloquent letter coming back asking us to effectively use them as a pilot, which I think we're intending to do so. You've just heard about the business case we've put together for Destination Hill End in sport and leisure, and hopefully we can see a big improvement and change in direction to our tourism as a result of that. The property assets challenge ahead still remains the Network Rail land at Shawfair. The main concern about that at the moment is getting the planning through to allow the Shawfair team to take that back to their funders, and in return we would get the land they would swap it for, a reallocation of the asset that they've got there. And then the final one is an overall budget challenge that we've obviously got for all services, just delivering the savings to address the budgeted shortfalls that we have at this point in time. How's that?
Councillor Smale.
First of all, can I thoroughly congratulate you as a councillor for Midlothian East on the new Battle High School, which looks absolutely fantastic. The gala on Saturday, there's such a buzz about it, and it's come in, I understand, under budget, which is absolutely excellent. With me, with every silver lining, there's always a cloud, and that is that we have quite a lot of demolition work to do in Midlothian. I just wondered if you could comfort us that the old New Battle can be brought down and the various other leisure facilities in Mayfield and Newton Grange in such a way that, first of all, we avoid the risk of arson, which we've had before, and secondly, that the sites, once they are reduced, are not any visually worse than they possibly can be. I'm conscious we've got a couple of school sites that have been around for years undeveloped.
Yeah, the demolition for New Battle, it gets handed to the demolition contractor tomorrow. So we're immediately handing it over to try and reduce that arson risk. The Mayfield and New Battle, unfortunately, due to the delays in the community side of the building not being ready in time, we had to renegotiate a disconnection with the utility services. Unfortunately, that's now at the end of June, so we do have a risk in the period of June where we will not be handing that to a demolition contractor, but we're retaining it ourselves. But we are looking to put security in place to try and avoid any risk there. Unfortunately, at Paradise, we actually had security on the night that the fire went up. The person was around the other side of the building. Whoever it was, obviously was watching, went around the opposite side and set the fire. So with the best will in the world, we'll do everything we can. I just can't 100% guarantee that we won't have an issue. In terms of raising it to the ground, the intention is to obviously demolish and take away the foundations and leave the buildings as least of an eyesore as possible. There will be big vacant sites. We are trying to then bring hard on our heels the plans for the replacement building on that site. New Battle, for example, I know there's moves afoot to look at social housing on there and potentially other uses. Within Newton Grange, the New Battle Pool site is part of a master plan, an ongoing master plan for the redevelopment of the town centre there. And Mayfield, similarly, the In It Together team are looking at what could be done within the Mayfield town centre as well.
Councillor Alexander.
Hi. Thank you. Can I just say that it's been an honour to see more SNP initiatives delivered to Midlothian, to the people of Midlothian, the Paradykes campus and the New Battle High School, that they've offered their doors, offering such a high amenity and learning amenities to the public and to the pupils. And I would just like to give a huge thanks to all those that helped to deliver it, and to bring, you know, and to bring such success to Midlothian. With the new funding for window insulation, can I ask, will that be spent on social housing, or will it be to open up, will it be open to those who own their own homes but can't afford to put in the energy efficient measures? And also, the low uptake on wet and dry leisure facilities and also school meals, do we know why there's such a low uptake, especially given that school meals might be the most important meals that some people have that day? And it's important that we find out why this is and rectify it. I have heard that it might be because some pupils can't get their school meals on time, and so are going across to Tesco's and the takeaways. And just regarding the leisure facilities, I just wondered if it's advertised that we have the subscriptions available so that you can pay every month, and is that being uptaken? Is there a high uptake on that? And just wondered if there may be a bit high as well for some people. So, yeah.
Okay, quite a wee list there. In terms of sport and leisure, the footfall figures are, unfortunately, they're adjusted this year because we had 5 months of Lone Head not operational. Obviously, it was getting adjusted and refurbished during the Paradykes redevelopment, so that's why our footfall figures are considerably down this year. We've also had the elections and things like that, which take out Last Wade Centre for best part of a week at times. So there have been reasons, underlying reasons, why the footfall's not quite so good there. The Tone Zone adverts, Tone Zone is our membership cards that we've got, they are advertised quite widely. Certainly all our centres push them quite well when people come through the door. Our uptake is good. We have just under 5,000 members within Midlothian for the Tone Zone. We've also introduced the Teen Zone, so we're trying to introduce a pathway so the children between sort of 12 and 16 are able to start using our gyms at restricted hours at a restricted cost. Our costs are under the competition, so if people want to go somewhere else, they'll pay more for, in some cases, lesser facilities. Moving on to the external window, it should read external wall insulation, so that's a typing error in the text there. The external wall insulation scheme is the one that's been going on in Mayfield and Lonehead and Pennycook, and it's a cladding that goes round the existing buildings. They have to be of a certain style of build to qualify to start with, and generally speaking that's been done to private owners as opposed to council blocks. We run our own refurbishment programmes ourselves. Put my glasses on, getting too old, can't see my own writing. School meal uptake, the numbers that we have are actually, they're class leading, to be honest. We are the best uptake on the mainland in Scotland for primary schools. Highlands and Islands tend to be a wee bit better than us, but that's because of the remoteness. Our high schools, yes, we do have issues there, and pupils are wandering to local amenities. The opening of fast food outlets next door to schools, it's a problem. There's nothing we can do in terms of an applicant puts in, it has to be judged on the merits of that application, and planning are difficult to just turn around and say no to it. We do make representation every time something like that goes in. but we are kind of at the mercy of people investing on our doorstep there.
Could I just ask a question, Gary? How is the legend system bedding in? I think there was some issues. I had some feedback that was a bit tricky when it was first brought in, but I've not actually been to any of my classes because I've got a bad back at the moment, so any feedback would be great. Thanks.
Feedback is we can help you get your back better as well, come with the classes. The legend system did have teething problems at the beginning, but we've got through digital services and our own team, we've been working together to make sure there's adequate training there. The new staff at New Battle went through 2 weeks of training before they actually started on the front desk. I actually used my own membership as a test case to see if the charging system would work and the lights, and there was teething problems. Now, if it happens to me, it's going to happen to others, so we're not shying away. There have been issues, but by and large, it's actually been quite successful. The issues seem to be in transferring from the old system to the new, as opposed to people coming in for the first time on the new system.
Does everybody, do all our councillors have membership of the Tone Zone? No, no. Councillor Alexander and I think we're the only ones. Shocking. Oh. Yes, you do. And I'm very much looking forward to getting back to my Zumba and starting it at New Battle. And I'm also I'm planning on starting the walking football as well once I qualify, much to the horror of the team when I told them that. So there's no more questions. We'll move on to item 5.12, performance report. Chief Executive Ken.
Thank you, Chair. I'm conscious of the fact that we're 2 hours in and we've got another 120 pages of agenda in front of us. So, I mean, I'll be relatively brief. I suppose what I would say is, in terms of the successes, I think they've been pretty well covered by my colleagues. To pick out a couple of things, I mean, there's a lot of good things happening in this council. In terms of the kind of progress we're now seeing on education, I think most notably, it is quite a turnaround from certainly where we were 10 years ago. In terms of health and social care, when it comes to integration, we tend to be seen as leaders in Scotland in terms of that, you know, absolute determination to bring together social care and health, and I think we're seeing some real dividends from that. And I think also that, I mean, you've heard this morning about the work at, you know, Hill End and the ambition there, some of the entrepreneurial initiatives being taken forward, not just in Gary's area, but in Ricky's as well. We've spoken quite a bit about the New Battle School, and there we are. We've put the best new secondary in Scotland into some of our most deprived communities, and I think there's a very strong statement of intent about that in terms of our aspiration for these young people, in terms of our ambition as a council. So if I might take a slightly kind of valedictory approach at this stage, you know, this is a council that over 8-10 years and more has come a very long way, and a lot of that is about ambition and aspiration, and it's really important we maintain that as we go forward, and I'm sure that as a council we will. We've also spoken quite a lot about challenges this morning, and I suppose as a starter, I'd say I think within the council we're very clear-eyed about things we need to do better and differently. I think we're a learning organisation. Things go wrong and things aren't good enough sometimes, and we try and build improvement on the back of that. I think that's important. We've talked about the challenges around about some of the scale of change in education in particular, and the 1140 hours in early years, the pressures that there are on adult health and social care. But at the highest level, there's two major challenges going forward. Neither of these will be a surprise, and they are linked. One is about financial sustainability, obviously, and what's important there is that we continue and indeed accelerate transformation, and that's about changing how we work with our communities. It's about the greater focus on digital and improving our services to customers and reducing costs at the same time. And it is about that more entrepreneurial approach that we need to take as a council. And the other thing, and again, various colleagues, Ian notably, have referred to this morning, it's about the rate of growth. And, you know, the figures for 2016 to 26, they don't just show that we will be the fastest growing council, but they show that we're growing at a rate 60% greater than any other council. That does a number of things. It exacerbates the financial pressures. It creates significant challenges which have been felt in our communities in terms of social infrastructure, impact in terms of school provision, housing, roads, and that's why it's so important that we're bringing forward that new capital strategy to the June Council. I suppose over time, the grant settlement will reflect our growth as a council, though it does that in the context, as Gary Fairley said, of reducing share of the Scottish government budget. But the thing that the grant settlement doesn't reflect is the capacity that's required within the organisation during the process of change, dealing with the immediate consequences of that growth and the number of projects, particularly in Gary Sherritt's area, that were involved in, the number of significant capital projects, the resource that takes in the organisation. And I think so, drawing together these themes of financial sustainability, transformation and rate of growth, what we need to be able to do is consider how we reinvent ourselves as a council to deal with that period of extreme pressure. And for me, the other thing is that we need to go back to government for some sort of recognition of Midlothian's exceptionalism, because it is exceptional what we're dealing with here. I'm hoping that at the June Council in 3 weeks' time we'll be presenting the city deal, the agreed city deal programme. That brings a lot of money into Midlothian, but it's actually it's mainly capital money. It's going to serve some of these needs in terms of new jobs and social infrastructure, but it's not actually going to necessarily help the council to deal with the day-to-day consequences of being this exceptionally fast-growing area. So I do think that thing about recognition of Midlothian's exceptionalism is important and something that we need to take forward in the future. Chair, there's lots of detail in the report. My colleagues that would have no doubt helped me with answering some of the detailed potential questions have abandoned me at this stage, but I'm happy to take any questions that members may have.
Thank you. Councillor Waller.
Yeah, thanks, Chief Executive, and congratulations on your appointment to another council. We'll miss you greatly. It was nice to hear you saying that over the last 8 years or so, Midlothian Council has shown great ambition in what we attempted to achieve for the people of Midlothian. And I think it's... and I'm looking forward to my visit to New Battle High School, because I remember very well the furore that was kicked up by certain members in this chamber when we announced that we were going to build a brand new high school in one of the most deprived areas in Scotland. They kicked up so much furore, as a matter of fact, I think you'll remember well, we had to attend several local community meetings to explain to the people exactly what we were trying to do. But the headline in the local paper at that time was "Area Devastated." And it had people up gnashing their teeth at us over a long period. And again, I think it now proves what I'm hearing about this school is that it's a fantastic facility and a great asset for the people in Midlothian.
You're here. Any other comments or questions on this? In that case, if we can move on, 5.13, balanced scorecard, Kenneth.
Thank you, and again, relatively briefly, this is a summary of performance for 2017-18. It covers the three key priorities within the Single Midlothian Plan in terms of bridging the gaps we see in our communities in terms of learning, health and outcomes in terms of economic circumstances. It's then set out under each of the five themes from the Single Midlothian Plan and as a series of indicators towards the back of the document in relation to learning and growth, internal processes and also the financial health of the organisation. And I'd simply note that a number of these will only be finalised after we've completed the financial accounts. Again, quite a lot of detail in here. I hope members find it a helpful document. I'm happy to take any questions.
Any questions? No? Okay, moving on to item 5.14, 2016-17, local government benchmarking results.
Yeah, this report provides an overview of the Council's performance against the benchmarking indicators for 2016-17. The benchmarking framework's now been in place for 7 years. None of you as councillors were here when it started, but it's improved a lot over that period, and it's certainly a lot better than what we had prior to that. And its primary purpose really is about sharing best practice and learning from councils who are performing well in particular areas. In 16-17, the number of indicators has increased to 75. That's because there's been really a complete review of the indicators for education and children's services, and that was, you know, a very much needed review. And the key principle of indicators, as they're introduced, is they should be broadly comparable across all 32 councils. And I think if you look at the indicators, for some of them that is the case, and for some of them it clearly isn't the case. And in future years, other groups of service indicators will also be revised so they become more robust, more reliable, more comparable. And particularly, I think, in terms of, you know, adult social care, with the indicators that I think are weak and unhelpful, that's particularly necessary. So in the appendix to the report, the indicators are grouped under the categories set out at paragraph 2 on the covering report. And for each of them, what we've done is we've provided a very brief national overview, a summary of council performance, and then the actions that were taken to improve performance in these various areas. And the indicators really fall within three broad categories. There are those indicators which are measures of council performance, there are those indicators which are measures of financial performance, and there are those that are measures of customer satisfaction. It's interesting you look at Midlothian performance, because in general we do relatively strongly on the performance indicators. In general, we do poorly on the satisfaction indicators. And the satisfaction indicators come from the Scottish Household Survey every second year. So, and because we're a relatively small council, despite our rapid growth, because we're a relatively small council, the Midlothian ones are in a very small sample size, which might raise questions over their accuracy, but doesn't explain why on satisfaction indicators we seem to do relatively poorly. In the financial indicators, it's a more mixed picture. In any case, I mean, the value of these indicators isn't really as a league table, though, I mean, certainly as chief executive, I find the comparisons helpful, where I can go to people and say, well, you know, we're making progress here, but why are, you know, Perth and Kinross, or dare I say it, Falkirk, better? Or why are we so much better than them? And both apply. So they're useful from that point of view. And, of course, councils across Scotland don't have necessarily common service structures. They don't have the same priorities, and they allocate resources in quite distinctly different ways. And I think all of that is important when you look at these indicators. As I say, the critical thing really is about their relevance, their comparability, and their reliability. And I just point you back to Ian's comment earlier on about the trading standards indicator, where we have only three staff. We're supporting East Lothian, and yet we look actually as if we're not doing particularly well, partly because the monies in relation to CABs are included for historic reasons in that indicator measure. So overall, this year, with a lot of change in indicators, we have 50% in the top quartile and 50% in the top half and 50% in the lower half. On balance, that actually looks slightly less good than previous years, the 16-17 year, but really that's because all the new indicators in education and children's services, where despite the fact we're probably improving as quickly as anyone in Scotland, we've still got a lot of work to do in terms of catch up. So that's reflected in these indicators. In terms of the appendix, I'd simply, again, there's a lot of information there. People like myself find it all very interesting and entertaining, and I realise that doesn't apply necessarily to everybody. But if you just look at page 4, what that shows for each of the indicator classes, what percentage of our indicators fall within the different quartiles. And I think just as an introduction to the different indicator sets, that's quite interesting. And some of it's slightly counterintuitive as well. So I think that's worth just, if you have time to look through the detail of the report, that's something that makes for some interesting reading. And beyond that, Chair, again, simply happy to take any questions that members may have.
Thank you. Thank you, Kenneth. Any questions? Comments? Councillor Smith.
Yes, I too have struggled with these tables for many years and often have the response that Midlothian is different. So in terms of assessing labour efficiency, which is key to any business, it's very hard to see. Let's take one example. For some reason, on waste collection, we always seem to be much more expensive than the Scottish average. And yet, geographically, there doesn't seem to be much reason why that should be the case. If you look at page 28, page 280 of the pack, we seem to have shot up from £29 in 2015 to £73 per premise now, and I've never quite understood why that should be the case.
In terms of waste, I mean, I think it's important for the two indicators, those that talk about the collection costs and those that talk about the disposal costs, to be considered together. Because the central position is that if you do a high amount of curbside separation, then your collection costs become high, but your disposal costs are then, or should be, relatively low. So there should be a balance between the two. So you can see in terms of, if you look at the ranks for 2016-17, we're 24th in terms of cost of collection per premise, but we're 10th in terms of cost of disposal. So that's because we do a high amount of separation at curbside, and therefore our disposal costs are less. The really interesting indicator, which isn't here, would be this: how the sum of the two compares to others. From my own questioning of Ricky on that, we're slightly better than average. What I would hope is, with the new facilities opening at Miller Hill, where we are undoubtedly significantly ahead of a lot of other councils in terms of having that sort of provision in place, that will improve our relative position and our absolute position with regard to waste costs.
Any other questions or comments? Thank you. Moving on to item 6, private reports. There are no private reports. And 7, date of next meeting, Tuesday the 18th of September at 11 a.m. Thank you all very much for your attendance today.
Thank you, Chair.